Interlude, 10207 AG. As Jessica continued to tell her story in the princess's private wing of the citadel, Irulan looked at her with obvious impatience and skepticism.
Paul told you all these things?
Yes, he did.
He felt it was important for me to understand, just as it's important for you. Otherwise, you can't write the truth.
I admit it's interesting, but I still don't see the point of all this, or why you considered it so urgent to tell me. I've already had enough trouble with Fremen traditionalists who believe that your son's past has no bearing, that before he became Muad'Dib, there was nothing worth remembering.
A flush infused her smooth cheeks.
Paul said it himself after his first sandworm ride, and the Fremen quote it often. And I am a Fremen born this day on the Habanya Erg. I have had no life before this day. I was as a child until this day.
Jessica pressed her lips together into a thin line.
Paul said many things to the Fremen, but he did not come to Arrakis as a newborn. Without the first 15 years of his life, he could never have become Muad'Dib.
Irulan turned her back and toyed with a ringlet of her golden hair as an idea occurred to her.
I've been considering adding a companion volume to my biographies, one tailored to a younger audience. A child's history of Muad'Dib, perhaps. Helia says that it's necessary to indoctrinate the youth, so that children grow to revere and respect the memory of Muad'Dib.
Disapproval hung heavy in her words.
Yes, the adventure of Paul and Bronzo could be included in that book, and it is entertaining. It's good to see Paul doing heroic things, acting as a dedicated and honorable friend.
She frowned.
But I don't see how it's relevant to the Imperial Regency that is the legacy of Paul's government and his jihad. That is what's important.
Jessica lifted her chin and lowered her voice to a whisper, suddenly worried again that unseen spies might be recording their conversation.
Haven't you understood what I just told you? Where do you think Paul learned how to manipulate populations, to cast the power of his personality across large crowds? He applied jongleur techniques not just to an audience for a performance, but to the Fremen, and then to the population of the entire Imperium.
But, Lady Jessica lifted a finger to emphasize her point.
And now it appears that Bronzo of Ix is applying his own experience to spread the opposite message.
Despite Irulan's obvious surprise, Jessica pressed on.
Be patient. Listen to the rest of the story.
Our most effective costumes are the assumptions and preconceptions the audience has about us. Rainvar the Magnificent. 2 days later, after the grand final performance, the Chusik audience dwindled away from the theater into the night. Rainvar did not take time to socialize with prominent Baliset craftsmen or members of the various Harmony Wood Leagues. Immediately after the performance was over, the troop leader became a stern taskmaster.
Time to go. Not a minute to waste. We've got new venues to play, new planets to visit, but we can't get there until we leave here.
Still wearing his glittering white jacket and top hat, Rainvar directed Paul and Bronzo to help tear down the props and holoprojectors, secure the animals, pack up the costumes, and load suspensor pallets for delivery to the spaceport. He had paid a substantial bribe to hold the last cargo shuttle of the evening so they could make the Highliner in orbit before it departed in a few hours. Stepping out of the way as 6 large men slid a heavy cage onto a wide flatbed, Paul asked Bronzo, "Have you seen Sialto? Or any of the face dancers since the performance?"
"How can you tell one way or the other? They could be any of these people."
Paul didn't think so. By now I recognize the other workers, for the most part. I haven't seen the dancers since they took their bows and ran back into the tent.
Maybe Reynvar gave them another job to do.
The troop leader shouted at the two boys.
Hurry up! Chat all you want aboard the Highliner, but if we don't make that cargo shuttle by departure time, the pilot charges me 100 solaris for every extra minute. I'll take it out of your wages.
You're not even paying us wages, Bronzo countered.
Then I'll find some other way to take it out of you.
The boys hustled to their tasks, though they kept an eye out for the face dancers. When the last ground cars and wheeled platforms were loaded, boxes and packs piled high, Paul and Bronzo scrambled to the top of one carrier stack and rode there as a wheeled engine pulled them out to the Sonan spaceport. A dirty old cargo ship waited for them there, bathed in white launching lights. Small figures scurried about, stowing the last of the troop's belongings. But Paul still hadn't seen any sign of Sialto, and they were about to depart. He followed Reynvar up the boarding ramp behind the last of the suspensor platforms.
Excuse me, sir. The face dancers.
Bronzo added,
if they don't get here in time, we won't have much of a performance troupe left.
Reynvar didn't seem the least bit troubled as he ducked inside the ship.
They have their own schedules. Don't worry. They're professionals.
Taking one last glance at the edge of the illuminated spaceport, Paul spotted a group of identical men running toward the ship at a distance-eating pace. They burst into the light of the landing field and raced across the armor-paved surface. The shuttle's engines began to hum and throb as the pilot completed his systems check, and a hiss of exhaust gases spat from outflow pipes. Paul paused at the hatch, motioning for the group to hurry, and all the face dancers ran up the ramp, unruffled. Bronzo looked at them as they passed.
I can't tell which one's Sialto, but he must be among them. I am the one you call Sialto.
The speaker stopped while the other shapeshifters passed without pause, disappearing into the cargo vessel's gloomy interior. Two of them smelled of thick smoke. A sheen of sweat glistened on Sialto's pale skin. Paul noticed that his hands were covered with blood, and spatters of scarlet ran up his sleeves.
Did you hurt yourself? It is not my blood.
When the cargo ramp retracted, the hatch door automatically closed, forcing them to retreat into the ship. The rest of the face dancers had already vanished into the corridors without bothering to speak to the boys. Only Sialto lingered.
We had another performance, you see. An obligation to fulfill.
Seeing the blood, smelling the smoke, putting the pieces together, Bronzo blurted the conclusion that Paul had hesitated to voice.
You murdered someone, didn't you?
Sialto's expression remained bland.
By the professional definition under which we operate, a necessary assassination is not murder. It is merely a political tool.
The deck began to rumble, and Paul caught the bulkhead for support. Unlike passenger transports, where everyone had to find safe and comfortable seats and buckle themselves into restraints, the cargo ship didn't bother with such niceties. As the vessel lurched off the ground, Paul focused on what Sialto had said.
Political tool? What's a necessary assassination? You're a Tliloxu face dancer. I thought you had no political interests.
Correct. We have no political interests of our own. We are actors playing roles. We perform services.
They're hired assassins, Bronzo said with a wry smile.
Mercenaries.
Performers, Sialto corrected.
You might say that we are playing our roles as assassins, real-life roles. There is always a need to eliminate troublesome people, and we simply fill that need.
But whom did you kill? Who hired you and why? Paul asked.
I cannot reveal any names or details.
The reasons for the assignment are irrelevant, and we don't take sides.
Sielto showed neither conscience nor regret for having killed, and his revelations deeply disturbed Paul. His own grandfather, Duke Paulus, had been assassinated in the bull ring on Caladan. Paul also remembered the traumatic attacks by Viscount Hundra Moritani during his father's wedding ceremony, and the subsequent war of assassins that caused so much bloodshed for Ekaz, Caladan, and Grumman. Assassination isn't just a political tool. It's a bludgeon, not a precise instrument. There's too much collateral damage.
Nevertheless, it is part of the Landsraad system. The practice has been condoned, at least implicitly, for countless generations.
Sielto flexed his sticky fingers and regarded the mess as he walked down the shuttle's narrow corridor toward the crew quarters.
If you wish to do away with assassinations, young man, you'll have to change the face of the Imperium.
Paul raised his chin.
Perhaps one day I will.